Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning in today. Again, I have Russ on the channel. So Russ, thanks so much for joining me. I just forgot how easy it is to talk to you. And so we've already been chatting. So maybe we'll add a little bit of that into the thing. I don't know if we should do an intro. I mean, everybody knows who you are. They can watch the previous episode if they want to know. Russ is a popular retro game guy. And we're just going to chat about retro games and life and stuff.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on, Aiden. I think this is awesome. Cool. And I've been looking forward to this interview, like, you know, for months now at this point. I'm like, I can't wait to do this again because I had a lot of fun last time. So
good. Yeah, it does seem to be doing well. I'm not getting the viewership per se at the moment, but everyone seems to be enjoying it. You know, it's getting such a good response from the interviewees and the guys in the scene. So I think it's just a matter of time before it really takes off because, it just seems to have a good vibe about it. Eh?
It does. And I think, the scene itself, like the retro handheld community, is not huge, but it can be in the future. And it'll be really cool to have these like historical documents down and be like, do you remember that time Russ said this or whatever? And so I think that's really kind of awesome.
Yeah, it is. I guess it is. It's like it's good to document these things. Like, I harped on about this in season one with almost everyone, but like, it's good for your mental health to like document these things and celebrate those moments. I don't know if we spoke about this in Discord chat but it stuck with me about the 400K milestone for you, and how you had to force yourself to celebrate it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's baked into my personality in that I always looking for the next thing. Like I remember, when I was a cookbook author, like the biggest example was my publisher called and said, you've made the New York Times bestseller list this week.
Crazy.
And that's like, that's the pinnacle of any author, and it wasn't, it wasn't a fiction book. It was like a health and diet section of New York Times. So it's not like I'm not beating out, J.K. Rowling or whatever, but still I made the list and I was number 20 out of 20.
That's amazing.
Right. So I was like the very last guy who got it. Right. But I got it. And the first thought afterwards is like, I wonder if I'll make it next week. I'm already thinking about the future and whether or not I will achieve some sort of future success instead of thinking like I hit this like lifetime milestone. I couldn't even celebrate that for 5 seconds before thinking about, okay, how do I like do this again? And so it's baked into my personality. And so I did appreciate that. It was my wife who really pushed me. It was like, you need to do something, do a Q&A or something just to like, establish the milestone and kind of thank people for the viewership. And so that's why I did that. And I'm really happy with that. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Because I do it in a different way. Like literally driving in, preparing for today. And, I thought to myself, like, where can I take this podcast? And I'm like, what other things could I talk about? And like, I started going, like thinking of, I can't remember what it was, but it was, I went way off topic. And eventually I was like, Aiden, this is about retro games. Just chill. Cause I've got a friend who's a psychologist. And I thought, we could talk about mental health issues. And I'm always trying to think of the next thing instead of just going, this thing right now is pretty cool. Just like enjoy it. You mentioned how you were sitting with someone who was like ahead of you. I think you said in subscribership, like a million or whatever. And then you were like, I'm nowhere. Like what's the point of even celebrating 400K?
Yeah. It is one of those things where the interesting part is that it's all just a number. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day, 400,000, 40,000, like they're great from like just kind of an ego standpoint, and also, viewership, you get more money from the ads or whatever, that kind of thing. But I don't know. The number thing, it's one of those things where I just can't pay attention to anymore because when I have a down month, I start to doubt myself to the point where I'm like, what am I doing wrong? What do I need to change? And it's good to think about those things to kind of reassess yourself, but not to the point where it's, you start to get the doubt in there and like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Or, all of a sudden like, I only got 8,000 subscribers this month when I got 10 last month. So maybe I should quit. And like, wait, there are 400,000 people who want to watch, And so, it is one of those where you have to find that balance. And it's just something I think that if you care, then you kind of struggle with it all the time. And I think you and I are both very similar in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, I think it's like we've said, it's good to just celebrate the moments and just kind of focus on the here and now. Like I saw a tweet by Casey Neistat. He mentioned, like, you know, the monthly metric of how many subscribers you get per month. And I mean, he's been doing this for years and he barely posts. Like when he posts, it gets a few million views or whatever. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
It was some ridiculous number of people who had subscribed that month. And he was like, it's amazing that I'm still getting subscribers all this time. Almost like saying, like, you know, like where you said, you know, sometimes I get 10,000 a month, then I got 6,000 and I feel terrible. He's like getting some crazy number and he's like, that's pretty cool. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is like, he's at another level and he's just celebrating something to him that's not big. Like he's like,
yeah.
Channel's not really growing anymore, but at least it's still growing kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
He's getting like 20,000 that month. And he, to him, it's like, oh, that's great.
Like nothing.
To other people, yeah, that would be life-changing numbers. You
exactly
know what I mean? So it's all perspective. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because when I saw it, I was like, you dick. Because I was like, just give me that and it would literally right change my life, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. No, it's
I think true. One of the big benefits that I had before starting my channel is that I didn't use YouTube at all. I mean, I would stumble upon YouTube video here and there, but like I didn't have an account with subscriptions or like channels I followed. I didn't know any of that
yeah
stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so that gives me, even now today, like I don't understand the YouTube rat race, like what it is to be yeah a YouTuber, you know? And so yeah I just kind of do it my own way. And sometimes I do the things that other YouTubers like say and suggest and whatnot. And other yeah times I'm just so off and it's fine. Like I like that kind of perspective. And I think there's a lot of viewers out there who don't like, we're like me, who don't want to invest in this kind of YouTube like social yeah aspect, like, you know, just as a platform. And so I try to always kind of tailor myself to somebody who just happened to click on this video from some mm reason or another. And then I always kind of give their perspective every time.
Yes, it's definitely important to keep that balance because, you know, like if you click on those sort of YouTube advice videos, your feed gets filled with them. And those guys are so obsessed with like, you know, like I went on a bit of like I analyzed Mr. Beast before I started my channel, but it was all purely theoretical and so that I could learn something, you know. But these guys are so deep in it. And for them, it's all about the metrics. It's all about if you do this and you do that together, you will win. You know, like it's just right a formula to them. But
yeah,
like talking to all of you guys, like talking to Rob and Tech Dweeb and like people from different angles of the same thing, the thing that makes it work is you. Like you right can play the game. And you're like, today I posted a video, I didn't do too well. And then I tweaked the thumbnail and then it started to pick up. Like those things are important. But at the end of the day, if I'm just pushing out content and just being a robot, people pick that up on that and the channel will slowly die. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that personality is super important. And yeah, there's that gaming element of YouTube. And I've never really kind of felt like I needed to do that or wanted to do that. I know I'm leaving like clicks on the table in the sense that like, I'm not appealing to that kind of algorithm, like the, you know, showing my surprised face and whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't do any of that, obviously, unless it's like, yeah, exactly. Unless it's like, ironically, you know, I like to do that sometimes, yeah. But, yeah, it's just, it's hard to, kind of find that balance between credibility and then playing the YouTube game. And yeah, for me, it's always just, okay, what would I be happy, like what am I proud of, you know, like my thumbnails, all the kind of stuff. It's like I've slowly been getting better at my thumbnails, not in the sense that they're clickable, but that I'm uh-huh just more proud of them. And so
yeah,
what I, you know, I used to be a food photographer when I was the cookbook author and all that stuff, and so I've been yeah using some of those traits that I used to just like I totally like divorced myself from that idea back in like 2019 when I was done with my last book. But now I'm like, you know, food photography is very similar to handheld photography. It's just still shots, you know. And so I've been using okay some of my old techniques and stuff to just kind of, you know,
oh, cool,
like staging where I'm going to put it, something. And so some of my thumbnails, you know, if you look at like my best handhelds of 2023, that took me about an hour to kind of set that picture up. And I was just like,
yeah,
you know, I want to make sure I'm proud of it, you know? And so
yeah,
it's oh, not cool a clickable thumbnail, you know, but at the same time, it's just a nice picture that I was proud of. And so that's my thumbnail and I'm happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This is the last YouTube point I'll make because I think we're just boring everyone sure because this is just interesting to us. But I think I've mentioned him as well in other podcasts. So it's a few of the big YouTubers that impacted me was Casey Neistat. Another one was Peter McKinnon. He was a big photography.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Love him.
Oh, so you've heard of him. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And he did really well in the photography scene. And I do remember watching him and being like, yeah, I can't believe him. Like, because there was a point in his like rise to success where you could see he had absolutely no idea why he was doing well. Like he was like, I just make pretty thumbnails. And like he was sitting with some YouTube guy and he was like, yeah, but that doesn't work. And you're like, well, it does work because his channel is huge, you know? So at the end of the day, like that's the thing of Peter McKinnon needed to be Peter McKinnon, you know? And as soon as he did try to do that YouTube thing, it didn't work. He had to stick to his, like his formula that works for him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, my last comment, I do want to move on too, but one other thing is like, you know, they'll always tell you, like when you make a YouTube video, you have to like start the video, no intro, in the first 10 seconds, tell people what the video is going to be about, hook them and all this there's all these things where they're like, this is the formula kind of thing. Mm. And me, I throw that all out the window and I have a 15 second intro before I even say anything, right?
Yeah.
The worst thing you can do for YouTube, but I'm never going to get rid of it because to me, it's like watching a TV show. You know, we used to watch The Simpsons. I'm assuming you guys had that in South Africa as well.
Yeah.
But like, it's the same intro every time. Mm. But I still like the music. I still like watching it. I like to see what Bart is going to put on the chalkboard.
Yeah, those little changes they make. You look for that every time. Yeah.
Right. And so that's the nostalgia piece where you're just prepping yourself for the experience that's about to come. And part of your brain just kind of gets used to it and you get in that mode. You're like, okay, by the time Simpsons starts, I am in Simpsons mode. And so that's what I try to do. It's like, okay, here's Retro Game Core. This, you've now invested yourself in the next 30 or 40 minutes to hear me yammer on about whatever. Here's your like kind of intro segue to get you ready for that moment. And so it's the opposite of what YouTube says to do, but you know, it's what I would do if I had a TV show. And so that's why I'm doing it.
I agree with you 100%. Like it's something that I picked up from British television and they're big on this. Like they have a formula for the beginning and they don't break it unless there's some big change in the show. Like there's the song, there's the intro titles, the whole thing. And it's the same every single time. Top Gear was like that. And it definitely, it like programs your brain. Like, you know, like, I mean, what you've done, like the da-da-da-da-da-da, and you're switching off your camera, that whole thing. Like it's a clever little like cute intro thing that people are now like, that's Russ, you know?
I'll get comments like, you know, like I'll put a handheld down and I'll swipe it away, you know, at the end or whatever. I'll get comments, but you didn't swipe. You're like, how dare you? You know, and so it's just part of the mythos or whatever, you know? And so, it's cool. It's fun.
Yeah. And because then when you break the mold, it's like, it almost creates this like brevity, like, whoa, something big is about to happen. You know, maybe it's like your April Fool's video or something where you just break the mold and then everyone's like, okay, something interesting's happening. Let's take note, you know?
So I did that with the Data Frog. You remember that handheld, like the $20 crap handheld that everyone was buying and trying to make better. I did a clean, like a cold intro where I just dropped the box on my desk and I said, all right, let's do a review. And then I did my video. And so it was just, that's the only time I've really done a cold intro like that. But I was just like, fine. Like I've had enough comments. We'll do a dumb review on this thing.
That's cool.
That was fun.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Yeah. I know those are the things that people remember them. Yeah. Cool. And they'd be like, so how's life? But how has it been? You know, like you hit the 400K mark and I think the last time we spoke, you were struggling with that sort of ebb and flow of things slowing down a little bit on the metric side. How have you sort of overcome that? Is it still like a daily struggle? How's it going?
Yeah. So things are going well. I'm at like 450-ish now. So, you know, pretty good growth even since 400. The metrics have picked up a little bit. I think it's the ebb and flow of everyday life of viewers in general, the holiday season, things like that. Yeah. Like right now I'm in a downturn again in January and February, like people don't want to buy stuff. They just bought a bunch of stuff for the holidays. And so I'm seeing that kind of feeling, you know, and it's good and bad. You know, it gives me time to breathe in terms of making other content. You know, I made a couple of really big starter guides over the past month or so, you know, for the Odin 2 and the Retro Pocket 4 Pro. And those take 10 times as much effort and time as a review video does, you know? Yeah. And so it's been good to have the space to be able to do those, but it's also exhausting in its own way. But yeah, things have been going well. I've slowed down my video output. I don't know if people have noticed, but I'm only doing 3 max videos a week. Before, it was okay. As soon as the video is ready, it would come out, you know. But I'm taking that extra day here and there to be like, I'm just not super happy with it yet. So let me just take another day, go over the edit, you know, maybe re-record a couple parts, that kind of thing.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And so I have been taking the time to do that, and it does. I've been getting more sleep, which is good too that way. And so that was a big thing for 2023. Was the year where I just didn't sleep. Like I was finishing most days at around 2 a.m. and then I was up again around 6 or 7. And
yes, I was doing that over and over. Stuck with me after I interviewed. Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of in the past sort of.
Yeah. So I'm definitely like, I got 8 hours of sleep last night, which is great, you know? And so, sure. My output is suffering for it. I may not make every video I want to make. But I am being a little bit more choosy about that stuff. And so I think this is a safer and more healthy place to be, you know, the worry of like burnout and this, that kind of stuff is just, it's gone, you know, like this is just,
sustainable.
I'm in a better groove now. And so I'm feeling good about that stuff. I still have lots of ideas, like things I want to do in the future, ways I want to push the channel and stuff, whether or not I ever get to them. You know, kind of the dreaming sometimes is what you need anyway, you know, just to kind of propel yourself, reassess, say, oh, am I on the right track, at least for me personally, and kind of move from there. So yeah, I feel good about that.
Yeah. So on that note, because the last time we spoke, you also mentioned, you know, branching out into other devices. But I don't know if it's just me. I feel like that you've been reluctant to do that. I've seen you post a few things slightly out the mold, but it feels like you haven't really done that.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. I have bought a lot of things that I want to review. I want to start a new series where two new series that I've been kind of thinking about and trying to kind of formulate in my mind. I'm always gun shy with some of the stuff where I'll think about it way longer than actually doing it, you know. But so the two I have ideas for, and I kind of started them, was one is like, I'm calling them like a throwback review, where I will buy an old console and then review that in today's kind of, you know, structure. And so I did that already with the original Game Boy last year. And initially people like weren't very interested, but it did pick up over time. And so it did get enough views where I think that there is an audience for that. So I have bought like a Neo Geo Pocket Color, things like that. Like just see, what is it like on the original, you know, and how is it different? And what, if I'm not going to be playing it on the original console, what are the best handhelds to play it on, you know? And so kind of putting it all together, because I get those questions a lot too. It's like, okay, what's the best thing to play Super Nintendo on, for example, or whatever. And so this kind of puts them both together in that regard.
Yeah.
The other one is actual game like list reviews. These are my favorite games of all time kind of thing. So I did one for the NES already, and it was 15 games, actually 17 games. I crammed them all in. I didn't realize it at the time, but yeah. So I threw a ton of games in there, and I was like, these are all the games from my childhood. And I want to do a whole series on that stuff. The problem with those is that, the NES was my childhood. Like I can't say, this was also my childhood, because there is no other system. You know?
It's disingenuous. Yeah.
Right. So I can't be like, here are my,
how long was your childhood?
Yeah. Here are my favorite Dreamcast games of all time. When the first time I played a Dreamcast was on the Retroid Pocket 2. You know what I mean? Like I can't, I'm going to come up with collections, I think, and it'll be like, these are my favorite right now, but it's going to be very different of a kind of video. And so I do have those two ideas and a couple others, you know, branching out into other ways to emulate, you know. I bought like a VR headset, you know, kind of do that kind of stuff as well. To be honest, those were all my big plans for 2024. And we just got hit with so many devices. It's been review after review. And so I haven't been able to catch my breath until actually this week. This week, I'm finally like, okay, I finished the RG556. Like, I don't see any coming in the near future where I have to address them. Let me do some things that I want to do. Right, exactly. Okay, cool. And so that's kind of where I am.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting process to get into. I'm experiencing a similar thing. Well, not a similar thing, but what was I going to say? There was a point I was going to make on that.
Sorry, I did a long rant there.
I'm recovering from, I should need to take notes. I'm recovering from a bit of flu. So I'm like, my brain's not as sharp as it usually is. But I've still got a bit of a backlog when all the devices. So I really struggled to get back into it for the new year. So I actually messaged Shem from Retro Breeze, and I just said to him, hey man, like, how are you doing? He was like, I'm fine. I'm just going for it. I don't know if it's an ADHD thing or what it was, but I think I was a little bit burnt out coming out of the holiday. Someone said, because you mentioned something to this effect, but I had my December holiday with my family and I got back and I was exhausted. I was like, the last thing I want to do is make a long video about the Retro Pocket 4. Anyway, so I took quite a while to get into everything. So, and then I really got into the weeds and like you mentioned making the setup guides. Like, I love doing the research. And I love taking notes and being very particular about it. And I took this step and I did this step and then I delete all my work and then I make a video about it. And I really love doing that. But the actual execution of it, I find exhausting. Like to actually make that Retro Pocket 4 setup guide was grueling.
I feel your pain, you know, and I appreciate that you made the video. I watched your previous interview with Rob and you were a little disheartened. You're like, oh, well, Russ already made his video. It's like, no, I'm so glad that you made your own, you know, because there are things like the setup changes all the time. Even now, both of those guides have little things that if I could, I would go back and change, you know, and I do it on the written guide, you know, because that's one of the reasons why I have a written guide, but all the same, it's a moving target. You know, we got Emulation Station now, you know, and so it's like there are many different things that that you just can't plan for. And so I appreciate that you're continuing to make those guides. Like, it's super awesome. But yeah, it is so hard to make a guide. People don't understand, like, to make a good guide, you know, I can totally just turn on a camera and be like, and then do this. And it would be a 4-hour video and whatnot. You do a great job of kind of editing that down and practicing ahead of time. You can totally tell when you're doing your setup, you've done it already, you know, and that's great because that's exactly what people need to see is somebody from authority speaking, you know? And so that's awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot of work and it is hard.
It is. Yeah, it's becoming a standing joke now in this because someone else messaged me about this because I think it was TechDweeb or somebody, but about me being off the cuff, you know, because I made a joke about it in the episode with Rob about how people are like, yeah, that was a great off the cuff video. I'm like, I spent 4 days researching that, you know, and planning what I was going to say. I think it was the Top Gear guys who they won an award for the best unscripted show, and they were like, We weren't there for the show because we were too busy scripting our next episode, you know? So it's like, it comes across off the cuff. And I think also the way I edit it and the way I present myself, I do come across very casual, you know? And, so I don't know what the edit's like for you, but it takes quite a long time for me because I do have a lot of ums and ahs and sort of like, ha ha. And then I like go on a tangent laughing about some game that I'm busy testing. And then I realize it has nothing to do with what I was talking about.
Yeah. I do edit a lot, you know, like, my biggest thing is just making everything as watchable as possible, you know, wanting people to just kind of enjoy that experience. And so I do cut out, you know, things here and there if it doesn't serve the overall video. But of course, I got to throw in my jokes as I can as well. So yeah, there's a lot of editing on my end. I'm getting better at it. Actually, I've been using a new tool. I'll send you a link to it, but it's called Recut. Oh, cool. And it's amazing. Like, so I do, you know, I record all my audio at one time. So I'll, you know, I record all the video, I put it all together. I think we talked about this last episode. So it's kind of like a documentary. I put it all together and then I record voiceover while watching it. And then I like marry the two and that's the video at the end. So the voiceover part takes forever. Like for a 30-minute video, it will usually be an hour and a half to 2 hours of me sitting down and recording just the audio.
And like stopping and starting and
Making mistakes and making sure I get every sentence correct and maybe checking if I say something, you know, like, oh, let me Google that, make sure I'm not an idiot, you know, because nothing's scripted for me other than that I know what I'm going to say, like, because I've already gone through the video part of it. So I already have like my cues, but at the same time, like every word is just kind of off the cuff. Anyway, so this new app, Recut, will take that whole WAV file, say it's a 2-hour WAV file, and it'll cut all the dead air out based on parameters that you give. And I've kind of synced it up to my own like vocal stylings. So it'll cut all that stuff out. And then you can like blow up the WAV file too. And then you can see the visual cue of the audio. So I can already like, I can see 10 takes of the same sentence. And I know that the 10th take is the one I need to keep. So I cut all the 9 out, basically.
Okay.
Because I used to be a linguist, a translator, and we used to work with audio files. Okay. And so you get to learn what a word looks like, not just what it sounds like, but what it looks like. Because you see the WAV file, and you're like, okay, that's a T ending. So I'll just look for another T ending. And then so So I basically cut my time down using like my old school, like Navy skills, where I can just pull out stuff out. And so now, if, you know, it used to take me almost 8 hours. Like I was just, it was grueling to cut through that like hour and a half, 2 hour audio to make it work and sync with the video. Now it takes me 3 passes. So I can usually do it in about 2.5 hours now. So it's a lot, like I've 25% of the workload now basically for that. And so that's one of those things that helped me mentally as well. It's just kind of having a more efficient way of doing things. It's still not the best. Like I think that maybe writing a script might make my delivery better, but then I would spend 8 hours writing a script. And so nothing's perfect, but this has been one of those little things I've done that really kind of help with the process.
That's brilliant, man. Yeah, because when you explained it last time, I was like, man, that is hard. So I'm glad you figured something out there. That's great.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's been a very different, like, I feel like the tone of my videos has changed a little bit because they're more audio driven now. I actually, once I'm done with it, the whole audio track is done from start to finish. And so then I overlay the video on that. It used to be that I would do the video and then I would sync the audio to the video and I would cut that video down to make it all fit. Now it's the opposite where I've got an audio track. Like I already know this video is going to be 30 minutes long because that's my whole finished audio. Now let's make all the video on top of it to just kind of make sense. The audio. Right. And so that's a lot faster process too. And that helps me because the pacing is now video led, not audio led. Like everything is about listening to my video, kind of following along as a podcast or whatever. And then now you've got all these visual cues to kind of help you along.
Interesting. I definitely need to rethink how I do it because at the moment it's not working for me. Yeah. I think I need to do a mixture of, but I think it's because I know I'm good at just like talking while I do a thing that I've just leant into that. But I think specifically for the long formats, you know, hour long setup guide, it's just not working. So I need to take a little bit of a feather out of like your cap and Rob's cap and kind of combine that and do my own little thing because it's not working.
Absolutely.
Because I love doing it, but it's too much, man. It's too much.
It's all about your personality and what matches and how it all works, you know? And I always make things differently as well. Like, so my RG556 review that I just released the other day, that was different. I actually scripted that one because that was framed in a different way. It wasn't my standard, like, now let's do buttons. Now let's do ergonomics, you know, that standard kind of review. It was instead, here are the like 8 or 10 things that I've discovered over the past couple of weeks using this thing.
Yes.
So I wrote out all of those where I was like, okay, here's number one, number two. And so I had a whole outline. And so as a result, I ended up recording the whole video while looking at the camera, which I rarely do. Usually it's just me looking at my video and it's an audio file only. But that time I did all of that and then overlaid it too. And so it was kind of a different perspective where I could show my face every once in a while too. And so that was a unique one. That's a little bit more of an intimate kind of recording arrangement. It's actually a lot faster too, because then I can just cut the video file and the audio at the same time. And so it does make it a faster and easier video to make too. So yeah, something along those lines. I feel like your setup guides are like that, where you're doing the video and audio recording at the same time. And then you're also like, you're doing it while you're doing your video guide, which is kind of cool. Like I said, I do my setup and then days later I sit down and record the audio of me talking about what I did, you know? And so it's a totally different approach.
Yeah, there's pros and cons to both, but the con with mine is I sit with my notes. So I take copious notes and then I sit with them and I redo the setup. But what I sometimes do is I'll miss a point. So then I'll be editing like this last video. I forgot to do Yaba Sanshiro completely. And then I had to go back and do it. So I hate going back and like filming again. So there are definitely pros and cons. But I don't know if this feedback is very helpful because I'm particularly invested in the sort of RG556 RetroPocket 4, like dynamic and what everyone's thinking at the moment. But that video of yours was definitely I found it quite engaging. Maybe it was just because you changed the format a little bit or whatever it was, you know, with the headings popping up. Okay. All right. Let's see what he says about this topic now, you know? So I definitely.
Yeah. Very segmented. Yeah. Mm. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. That was, I spent more time thinking about how I'd make that video than actually making the video, which I think is sometimes good to invest that kind of thought into it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because I had 2 weeks to kill where I was like, I've done my impressions video. It's not even shipping yet. And so I've got time and space to take my time with this review. And that's why I kind of spent a little bit more time with it. I used to, you know, back in the day, I would get an AmberNick device and I would do like an impressions video. And then like maybe a month or two later, I would do my final review because I wanted to make sure I totally understood. Maybe I was waiting for custom firmware to come out. And so I used to take a long time between the two and I would call it like the final review, you know, kind of thing.
Yes, I remember that.
So that's just kind of in that same spirit. But nowadays, especially if it's an Android device, you know, like it's custom firmware other than the Gamma OS, like there's not really anything. You got what you have to work with, basically. Mm. And so a 2-week turnaround is a lot more sane, I think, in that regard. And it does give me a more finalized kind of look at things. And then I can do a re-review, like the RG505. When Gamma OS came out, that did transform the experience. So I'm like, okay, let's do a new review on that one. So
yeah. Yes. So what do you think of the RG556? So because when it first got launched, I honestly, I was like, oh, here we go, AmberNick again. Like it feels like an AI made this thing and it's just
same.
But I was actually surprised when your video came out because I was like, that's maybe also why I was like, I really want to listen to what Russ has to say here because it came across quite positive. So are you still feeling like that? So do you still think it's a great choice?
Yeah, I was very surprised with it. I have been pretty negative about AmberNick lately. Like I've been fed up with some of their stuff, you know, especially like the 35XX Plus and the H, the firmware and the software kind of update stuff. Like, you know, they have been doing updates for it, but they require you to do like a 10 gigabyte download to get the update. And it's from one of their servers. And it's just another example of how they don't think about the customer first, you know? And so I've been kind of fed up with it and I didn't have a lot of excitement about the 556 when it first came. It looks ugly. You know what I mean? Like just like you said, it looks like it's made by an AI. It looks like it's made by Palkitty, to be honest, you know, like the old school Palkitty.
I don't know, man. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is, it won me over. And the best thing I did with the RG556 is that I reviewed the Retroid Pocket 4, the non-pro, in between my impressions and review of the 556. Okay. So I spent a lot of time with another device. And then when I got back to the 556, I was like, this is amazing. Like it was the ergonomics. It was the screen size. Like there were so many different things about it where I was like, I actually think I like this better. And that was not how I came into that review initially. I was like, yeah, they're putting all the pieces together, but it still looks like a camel, you know, like a horse made by committee is a camel, you know, where it's functional, but ugly. And so that's kind of what I thought about, you know.
Okay, I never heard that. That's good.
it's said often in government work, like, oh, we're making a camel here, a horse made by committee. Because a horse is elegant, right? You know, I think a Retroid Pocket and an Odin, those are very elegant looking devices. They're a little on the cheap side. Sure, I get it. They're plasticky feeling and all that. But the 556 didn't have that same feeling, but it took a little bit of time. And to be honest, Emulation Station really helped with that too. Cause like having that software experience where I can just ignore AmberNick's Android build, like that really helped as well. And so, it takes the work to get that thing put together, like to set up the emulators, just like any other Android device, and then cover up all of AmberNick with the Emulation Station or Daijisho front end. And then, after that, it's like, wow, this thing is actually a gaming console and it's something that I enjoy using. So I'm still playing it. And, you know, it's been 2 or 3 days since I made that video and it's still sitting by my nightstand. So,
yeah, well, that's actually because the video I posted today, completely unrelated. Well, I posted a video about Emulation Station and I kind of did a, that was a 50% on the fly, 50% planned video. And it was, I thought I like to sometimes, because I'm often late to the party, I'll add a little bit of a story to it. So it was me setting it up for a family member. I set up the X55 for him and then I realized I'm probably not going to use the X28 in another video. So let me set that up for him. Let's put Emulation Station on because X55 is Linux. It'll be familiar to him.
Right.
And I love the X28. I know there's a lot of problems with that device. But a similar sort of thing, like just the chunkiness of it, the controls. I mean, I know the joysticks suck, but there's something to be said about just having a large screen on a device, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
And no, I totally see why people love the X28. Yeah, it's great. So.
Yeah. Me and Shem and I forget his real name, but he's Neotib on the Discord, a French guy. And he's a huge fan. Like every time I mention it on my Discord, he's there. He's like, yes, the X28. It's beautiful. Yeah. So he'll probably comment on that. But yeah, it was a special device to me. But I think the RG556, I think, has a similar thing where it ticks a lot of the right boxes, even though it has quite a few things that are quite irritating about it, you know?
Right. It is a polarizing device. And like I said, I came to it pretty negative, where I was just like, yet another Ambernic, like, half-assed project, basically, is the way I kind of thought about
that
it.
That was my impression.
They always, one step forward, two steps back every time. Like, they just find some unique way to kind of screw themselves over. This one isn't perfect. I mean, those sticks just really suck. I actually put on a Gillikit sticks after making the video. Uh-huh. This improves it a little bit, but there's something wrong with their software. That's why the analog sticks are not getting a full range of motion. And so it's still, they kind of screwed themselves on that again. But
yeah.
But all the other things do come together in a way. It's total. I think they probably spent some time thinking about it. Their designer, you know, probably spent some time like really kind of trying to tweak things. But most of the time, they are just throwing things at a wall and seeing what sticks, you know. And this time, most of the things did stick on the wall. So that's good.
Yeah. But you said it feels like there's a new guy designing that device.
Yeah, I called it an ergonomics engineer, right?
Yeah, ergonomics engineer, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't feel, both this and the Arc handheld, the one that's like a Sega Genesis controller, both of those don't feel like Ambernic devices. So I don't know what's going on there. Like, are they just changing things up or what? Or hiring, like, part of me thinks that they're just hiring somebody at the factory to kind of help build their stuff, right? Like, it's not necessarily their designers getting better, but that they are using better contractors or something like that to kind of outsource their work. Like, that's kind of, I don't know. I've wanted to travel to China for a while now to actually go and see these factories and get an idea. I don't know if I don't know if they'll let me come, first of all. And then also do they want me in those factories and reporting on that? Probably not.
Yeah.
And so
probably not.
It's one of those where I've talked to a couple of companies. They're like, sure. When are you thinking? Like, next year, the year after? Like, they're pushing it out. And so
2030.
Right. And so that's a very clear indication to me that they are a little bit worried about that. But I do think it would be a very interesting content. I could probably make a couple videos about that. Like, let's go to China and see what it's like over there. And
Do that with Pow Kitty. That will be interesting. Right.
Yeah. There's so many logistics to this, though. I've thought a lot about this, but like translation, like, I don't speak Chinese, you know? And so like, I would need a translator, an interpreter.
Yeah, you need a fixer.
Right. And so who could I get? Like, I'd probably have to hire a third party person, because they wouldn't want like some employee like tagging around with me. And so, I'm not really sure how I would approach a lot of these things. I don't think their English is great for most of these folks. They're writing to us in English, but they're using Google Translate often to like kind of, or whatever they're using on their end to translate it over when they speak. Yeah. And so it'll be really interesting, but I am hoping to make a trip at some point. I was going to go this year, but unfortunately I had a conflict. We have a family vacation. And so the perfect time would have been during Comp2X, where, what are they, not Comp2X, that's a Navy exercise, Comtex or something like that. It's like a computer expo in China, in Taiwan. And so that would have been awesome. You know, it's like CES over there.
Yeah.
And so that would have been a great opportunity. I even got a couple invites from like ASUS and stuff, like, hey, are you coming? Like, we'll see you there, kind of thing. I'm like, can't come this year because it's a conflict, but maybe next year that might be a good time to go over there.
Yeah, you're definitely the right guy for that. You could make a brilliant sort of documentary style video on that.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
And everyone would want to know what's going on over there.
I have some worries, like, you know, environmental stuff, you know, that kind of thing. Like, what is the cost of these handhelds? We call them e-waste all the time, right? But like, what is the waste there? So,
Sorry, one more thing about the RG, because like I said to you, I just upgraded the Wi-Fi and the Ethernet in my studio so that I can do streaming tests for my videos. And then I just kind of got into streaming a little bit while I wait for my Steam Deck. So I've been streaming on the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro, and I'm enjoying it so much. I don't have my Retro Pocket 4, but these beautiful sticks on the 2S and the 4.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
And they are so nice and so good that I know when I finally get my RG556, I'm going to probably go on about that a little bit too much in my video, because for streaming, if you are someone who does stream a little bit in your house, that is going to frustrate you, you know? And it's just such a pity. like they've got great triggers on there. You said the triggers are lovely. So I just don't know why they went that route. It really upsets me.
Yeah, and I harped on it in both of my reviews. I was like, this is what's holding things back, you know? And so I'm hoping, I don't even know if Amberdick watches my videos, you know, but I am hoping that at least creates kind of, you know, there's good and bad that come with like being somewhat popular on YouTube, is that people start to just take your word as gospel, right? Where all of a sudden like, well, Russ said this thing, you know, the D-pad's not Hadoukenable or whatever, right? But the other part of it is that if I can use it in a negative way, be like, this sucks and needs to be fixed, that maybe it'll get to the company eventually, right? It works really well with Palkitty. Like I'll just say, hey, this is great and this is not great or whatever. And then sure enough, there's a new device that comes out. I have no communication with these folks, right? But sure enough, a new device comes out. I'm like, all right, they watch. And so that's great. Like, I want to use that for like negativity for the power of good. It doesn't really work with Amberdick, unfortunately, but
yeah. Interesting. That actually, it brings up a very, so I think I've told you that I'm into FPV flying, like little drones, and you put the goggles on and you fly around. And there's a very influential company in the States, I think it's Roto Riot. Anyway, they like drive the industry in a big way. And they made a review, and I think it was actually an April Fool's video, where they called it The Bone. And it was a drone, but it was just straight, and it only had two props, and they flew it through a wall. But it was all fake, like through a gap in a wall. And some Chinese company were like, they want The Bone, and they made it, and it went onto Banggood, and you could buy it, and it worked. It was crazy. Wow. And they just had a big laugh because they were like, clearly we have some influence and they're listening to us, but was, you know, nobody wanted the thing. It was just weird.
So, I hate the word influencer, right? But there are times where you can really leverage that. You can be an influencer, you know? And so I think that's just kind of a nice idea. I used to hear that a lot in the cookbook like sphere, like right when Instagram was starting and stuff, you know, food blogs, oh, this guy's an influencer. I'm like, don't ever call me that. That's a terrible word, you know? But now it's like, it can be used in a good way. Like, I want to influence things to make things better for the community, you know? And that's a great way to do it.
So talking about influence, like, let's talk about your very scientific and gospel truth D-pad tests that everyone follows. I didn't even know that there was a little bit of controversy around this, but you mentioned that, you know, some people like take it as gospel truth, and then other guys are like, this Russ guy is a complete idiot. It's total nonsense. How do you feel about the whole thing? Because, I mean, I definitely do a bit of a D-pad test. I take a few NES games and I do the little like wiggle the D-pad and show people that it does ghost diagonals and that.
Yeah.
How did you end up there? And did you like, I don't know, just let's talk about that a bit.
Yeah. So, you know, D-pads are so subjective. It's ridiculous. It's all about like what you grew up playing and what you find to be the most accurate. And there's so many nuances to it. And so at some point I just started
like, our retro.
Exactly.
World,
you know? Right. You've got your PS Vita stands. You've got like people who want that Super Nintendo kind of mushiness. Like there's all sorts of like factors involved. I'm kind of in the middle there. Like I just appreciate a good input, you know? And so, The way it goes for me is that over time I kind of evolved into like the Contra test, which, you know, when I first came out with that Contra test thing, I think someone had mentioned it to me, right? And then I showed it off and I remember Reddit being like, this is not a test. You cannot do this. This is not what, that's not the Contra test, you know? And they were like, this is what you're supposed to do, blah, 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 blah. But I just kept doing it. And it's part of it is standardization, right? Is to say, okay, this is the same test I'm going to do. And we're just going to start talking. Like it's a moment to start talking about the D-pad using that as an example. And the biggest one, like you mentioned, the Street Fighter one was like, this guy is missing his inputs because he sucks at Street Fighter. It's not the D-pad's fault. And so, and that is so true. Like I am not good at Street Fighter. Like I've been playing it forever. You know,
well, Stubbs said you're pretty good. So I don't know.
Well, Stubbs is terrible at that. He's terrible at fighting games. He's good at Tekken because he can just button mash, you know. But anyway, I don't want to trash talk him all day, but he's kind of
bad. We can just finish the podcast off trashing Stubbs. That'll be fun.
Yeah. He's great in so many ways, but Street Fighter games. But anyway, so I get it. Like I'm missing inputs. My timing's not great. I don't like playing competitively that game at all. You know, like it's just kind of fun, you know. But when I'm making my assessment where I'm saying it's hitting 75% of the time or whatever, I and it's my fault, but I didn't do a good job of explaining that. That's when I'm doing it correctly, You know, it's not like the factor doesn't come in that I'm missing an input. I know when I'm missing an input. I know when I do it correctly. And so that's when I like do my count. It's like, okay, I hit that one, I hit that one. But I've seen comments of like, the dude could not do, you know, 10 Hadoukens in a row. Therefore we can't listen to him. I'm like, well, I understand that, you know, okay. 8 times I might be able to do it right. And those are the 8 that I'm counting. And so I actually made a comment about it in one of my videos recently where I was like, listen guys, like, I know I'm not good at Street Fighter and I miss my inputs, but that's not how I'm counting it. And it's all about, for me, it's all about just starting the conversation to try to describe the D-pad. That's the most important thing for me, is to describe the feeling of it, what the experience is going to be like, what is it similar to? And I try to use popular handhelds as an example. Like, I'll talk about a Switch, I'll talk about a PS Vita, things that people probably touch with their fingers, you know, or a Super Nintendo controller. And so, I'm always trying to find that middle ground where it's just an opportunity to start talking about the D-pad and how it's going to feel, because none are the same. Even between devices, there'll be variation, you know? Mm. And so it's always just a really interesting kind of idea that people are like, well, it failed the contra test, therefore I'm not going to buy this device. I'm like, whoa, like, just chill, let's talk about this. Like, that was just part of the conversation, you know? And so When I film those parts, when I'm filming myself playing Street Fighter, when I'm filming myself playing Contra, I do that for like 10 minutes straight because I have no idea at that time how long I'm going to talk about it. So I need that footage so that I can talk about it while it's playing. And so it's one of those things where there's just never really a definitive way to describe a D-pad. And that's just the method I've stuck with. And now that I've come up with a Contra and Street Fighter tests, and, you know, I'll throw Celeste in there sometimes too, I'm just going to keep using them because that's the same standard. If they go back a year back and they look at another video, they can see that same standard there. So not perfect, but that's my benchmark that I use.
Yeah, because there's two things we've got to try and do. We've got to firstly, like, try and create some kind of standardized test that we can carry out throughout our videos so that every single time we can go back and go, well, in this test, if we go historically back to the 351P, actually, the 351P was better than this brand new device. Like, we've got something to go through the time of our channel. And then the other thing is to try and convey something over a screen. And it's just visuals and audio. That's all we've got, you know? It's not like we've got some sort of tactile thing. So, I had and this is where my off-the-cuff thing, like, blew up in my face. So the audio, I didn't use B-roll of my game test. So sometimes I do a game test and then I'll just squish it all together and then I'll talk over it. But this particular bit was me just, I found what I was saying interesting, and the footage was me playing a racing game. But while I was racing, I was like tapping the brakes the whole time. I was like steering and tapping, and I was like trying to speak and race this car. So I was like slowing down and speeding. Like, I was playing terribly. And some guy was like, this guy's an idiot. He doesn't know how to play racing games. Why are you tapping on the brakes so much? You know? So anyway, can't win them all.
Yeah. Is another secret of mine is that when I'm doing my game testing, you know, that takes me an entire day. Like, so the RG556 review video, right? I did a section as a 5-minute segment where I'm like, here are all the games I can play and whatever. That takes me an entire 8-hour work day to make that footage, right? Because I'm testing everything, seeing what works, writing down the notes or whatever. And the other thing I'm doing while doing all of that, because it is mind numbing, I watch TV while I'm doing that. Yes. So I will be watching a show or a movie. Yeah. And so it just helps the day kind of go through. And I end up finishing my day very satisfied because I've done all this testing. I'll look at the footage later. And I also got to like watch a story unfold, you know, whatever show it is. But the funny thing is if it's a really good show, I will start, like, I can't play F-Zero while watching TV at the same time, right? Like, I've got to like, okay, now we got to focus, you know? And so, it's pretty funny. If you see really bad footage from me, like I'm just playing poorly, something exciting was happening on TV at that time.
Yeah, well, there's a new season of Bad Batch if you want to watch that for your next test.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
You know, the Star Wars, is that not there was an animation you said you'd watch the whole, was it Bad Batch?
It was Rebels.
Rebels.
Because I was getting ready for Ahsoka. And so I was like, I'm just going to watch all Rebels. Like, this is something that I didn't have patience for at the time. But now it's like, if I'm only half watching it. Yeah, exactly. I finished all of Rebels to get ready for Ahsoka. And that was thankfully because of whatever device I was reviewing at the time.
Yeah. Actually, I need to, because I never realized, when you told me about that, I didn't realize that it referenced Ahsoka. So, and then I watched some other Star Wars, you know, everything's connected in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then I realized I need to watch Rebels for my next test. Yeah.
I've been playing the Odin 2 a lot. That's like my big thing lately. I know I keep harping on that damn thing, but man, it's so good. You don't have one, right?
I don't.
It's so good.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just get into that. So like where I am right now, so the Retro Pocket 4 Pro is the most powerful device I have right now. And maybe that's why someone was like, oh, yeah, you're paid by Retro. Someone actually said that to me. I think I messaged on a group chat that we're on. I was like, am I officially a YouTuber now? Because someone just told me I'm a paid show. But yeah, so I'm really enjoying that device just because it's the most powerful thing I have at home. And so I enjoy it. And then I can also stream my Steam games on it. But then I also have a Steam Deck on the way, which I'm really excited about. So
yeah, I heard. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm not too, like, personally interested in the Odin 2 right now, just because of the limitations of Android, and I really want to play my Steam game for personal gaming. Mm. But, you know, I understand the Odin 2 is, like, the device right now. Is that your top device at the moment?
It is. It's actually, like, taken over my Steam Deck. Like it is now, like I haven't touched my Steam Deck in a month at this point.
Okay.
Isn't that crazy? Like, so, and part of that is because what I'm trying to focus on gameplay wise, like I'm specifically just looking at emulation and stuff. So, I'm playing through like Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes on the GameCube, and then like Switch games, you know, I've been playing through like Prince of Persia, Sea of Stars and stuff.
Okay.
And this is the Odin 2 to me is a better experience than playing on an actual Switch because, it's a 1080p screen, and you can play most games in docked mode, which means they'll run in 1080p. Whereas if you're trying to play a handheld Switch, it's going to be 720p. And so it does give you a kind of elevated experience. You can use cheats and all that stuff as well. Yes. And so the Odin 2 is just, it fills me with such a like warmth when I play it, like it is like sparks joy or whatever, you know, like it is, it's just kind of crazy.
Man, this the battery just life very is very nerdy really quickly.
Right.
Cause you'll only hear that kind of stuff like in this world, like it gives me joy. It gives me a warmth in my heart. And the problem is I totally relate. Like, it's not like I'm like judging you, you know, like,
right.
That's how I feel about the Retro Pocket 4 right now.
Right, exactly. Whoa. And the battery life is got to be the thing that just really pushes it over. Because I'll be playing a game for an hour or two, and I'll like swipe down from the Android thing and look at what the battery life is, and it says like 89%, and I'm like, holy crap! You know, like I have been playing this thing for hours, and it lost 10% battery, and so that's been the major thing for me. So like I'm going on a trip to Japan in about 3 weeks, and I'm just going to take the Odin 2 with me. Like I could take the Steam Deck. I could play like my light indie games. I could do all this kind of stuff. I usually do bring my Steam Deck, but no, I'm just going to bring the Odin 2, you know, and that's what I brought with me on my Christmas vacation as well when I went home to Washington. And it's been perfect. And so it's hard to say this all the time, but like it is a quitting YouTube kind of handheld where it's just like, I'm done. Like it's so good. You know, I got to put it away and forget about it for a little bit so I can review other devices. Like that's how great it is. It's expensive. It costs a lot of money and I totally get all that, but it is, it's creating this joy in my retro gaming experience that I just don't typically feel. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It does spark a lot. Like, so in Rob's episode, the first episode now of season 2, I went on, I don't know if I went on a bit of a rant, maybe that was after, not on the show, but like I thought about the Odin 2. Obviously I have a limited budget for the channel because I've also got a day job, a business and all that kind of thing. So, you know, I can only spend so much per month. And then I thought, you know, I really need to get the Odin 2. Like so many guys in the scene love it. And then I converted the price to rands and I was like, shit. it's a lot of money. So I think my problem is I'm always converting it to the South African experience, whereas like 98% of my viewers are in the States. So I do need to take that into consideration, but it is a huge chunk of change. Like it costs a lot of money.
It's Steam Deck prices.
That's the thing, you know? And so, I mean, like you say, it has replaced your Steam Deck, but the thing is, I suppose we're all having different experiences, but you have been playing the Steam Deck for a year, 2 years, whatever it has been. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting into Steam. So, you know, I suppose, and that's, I think I want to make a video about it. It's like, because people keep arguing in the comments about it in my YouTube channel, like literal arguments. And it's just weird. Like, I hate to get super serious about playing games, but it's where you are in your journey of playing games. You know, I mean, if you've just gotten into Steam, then definitely a Steam Deck is the way to go. But right. If you're like Russ, who's been doing that for a while and really wants to just emulate Switch games in the best possible way, then maybe an Odin 2 is the way to go for the next few years, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's all like, no argument there. Like, you can play so many more games on the Steam Deck, right? There's just all the PC library, plus all the emulation, plus the things that the Odin 2 cannot emulate, PS3 and Wii U and whatnot as well. And so no question there. Like, there are so many like things that you can do on a Steam Deck, and that does give you the best value. But the Odin 2 is a better size, better battery life, all these things that for me just fit better right now in my journey, like you mentioned. So it's just how it is. And 6 months from now, I will probably be singing a different tune. There might be something else. It's not going to be the MSI Claw, but maybe, you know, so you never know. There might be some other handheld out there that I might fall in love with. But right now I've fallen for the Odin 2 more than any other device I've had in my YouTube over the past, you know, 4 years, 3.5 years.
Yeah, and like you say, but it's definitely personal, like, because we're talking about personally what you're enjoying right now, and it is difficult because you have to stay motivated, like, whatever, like, what's, like, the Mi Mini Plus, what a great device. I still haven't made effing video about it because I've been obsessed with the Retro Pocket 4 Pro, you know, and that's a problem. So this week I haven't put it down. Have I put it down? I kind of have, but I have to. I have to set it aside because I'm just loving that device right now. It's just something about it. Who was it that was moaning at me about the grip? They were just like, it's just stupid. Oh, Shem was just like, dude, like, I think it looks brilliant, but the crystal with the black grip, I think it looks great. And Shem's like, it looks awful. It's ugly. You shouldn't buy a device that you have to still have to have a grip, but none of that same with you with the Odin, like, none of that makes sense to me. To me, it's just beautiful and it works perfectly and I'm happy, you know? So, and then it totally demotivates me to make videos. Cause now I'm like, Mi Mini Plus.
I bet that's what I'm doing today. After this interview, I'm doing Mi Mini videos cause the new Onion OS came out. And so, I'm going to have to get back into that one. And it's an amazing device too. Paradox with that is that I've been playing I don't have it on me, but the GKD Pixel, like that little vertical handheld made out of metal.
Yeah.
That I was not super hot on when I first made my review, but man, I've been playing all the time because I throw it in my pocket and take it with me too. And so I'm going to make a new video on that one too as well at some point.
Oh, good. Yeah. So Go Game Geek have a few devices for me, but they went on holiday. So those are coming soon. And one of them is that. And my impression of that was because I loved the RG Nano. Like, I know nobody liked it. It was too small and had a few, like, my main issue with it was the software. Like, it's why split the software? Now people have to go into another thing to play music. It didn't make any sense. But I just thought it was a great concept. So I feel like hopefully, I don't know what the software is like. Maybe you can tell me, but just feels like they've perfected the RG Nano concept.
Yeah, the stock software is not great, but MinUI works for it. I don't know if you've used that.
I haven't yet.
And then so I worked with Sean Inman, who's the developer. He showed me a trick to get because there's certain emulators, stock emulators, that work better than on MinUI. MinUI has got a beautiful interface and stuff, but it's not like performance minded and not optimized for that chip, whereas the stock ones are because the chip's been around forever. And so he showed me how within MinUI to launch any game you want with the stock emulator. So you can choose.
Okay, cool.
So for example, Mario World 1 on Super Nintendo plays great with a stock emulator, or I'm not stock, with the MinUI emulator, right? Perfect. But Mario World 2 does not. And so he showed me how to make a pack that basically allows you to say, they all look like they're in the same interface. Like, you're just scrolling through your Super Nintendo games. But when you start Mario 1, it's going to be with the MinUI interface. And then when you start Mario 2, it'll be with the stock emulator. And so I made a GitHub page and put the pack on there. And so that's the video I need to make. It's like, hey, here's how we fix the GKD Pixel, where you get a beautiful interface, but still all the performance power that you'd want. And there's certain emulators that he just doesn't support. Like, he doesn't have arcade games and MinUI and stuff. So I added those back in. And so Yeah. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. It's not perfect, you know. There's probably more work I could do. For example, you just brought up the idea of an MP3 player. Like I could set that up, and I need to make a new release that adds that in there, because I think people would like that too.
Yeah,
it's a really neat little device.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing that. It feels like Rust from the olden days, you know.
That's exactly what it was. I'm like, all right, what's my GitHub login? Let me get back in here.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember when you did that comic book theme for the 350 series devices.
Yeah,
And that was pretty cool.
That was my first like getting into the community. I had the RG350 and I made my first theme, and then I just kind of figured I was just messing around with JPEGs all day, basically. And I got it all to work, and then I put it up on Reddit, and people were like, "Hey, thanks, cool. Like, where can I get this?" I'm like, "Oh, I should make a website." And so that's like that was like, the very beginning stages, like July of 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, it's funny, because I haven't actually thought about that since then. That's actually how it started, all started for me. Cause I always talk about the 350M, and it meant so much to me. It was such a special little device. I was in like midstream. It was kind of like when I was busy with my setup guide, and then you posted your video, and I was like, oh shit. You know, like I was in midstream, like busy making what Adam Image did. So like, I had seen the opportunity to do that, and I was like, I can just build this thing myself. I can layer, what was it, the menu system on top of OpenDingX, and I can make my own thing. And I was going to build a theme and the whole thing. And then they launched Atom Image, and I should have just done, like, now in hindsight, I should have just made a video about it anyway. Probably would have done really well. But anyway, that's how
When I first started, that was my idea with RG350. It was not to make a website and not to make videos, but to make SD cards. I was going to make just the first SD card, not the games card, right? But just to make a super simple SD card that had all of the configuration set up, all the right emulators, all that stuff, and just be like, here you go, add your own games and BIOS, and then you'll be good to go. And just kind of make it easy for everybody else. And I was like, I could do a business of this. I could buy 20 SD cards, make these 20 images, see if people buy it, and then just kind of slowly make, you know, $1 per sale or whatever.
Yeah.
And then my wife was like, why don't you just teach people how to do it? And I was like, that's probably a lot easier. And so
the right choice, because I'm not sure, because there are guys doing it on Etsy, but I don't know how lucrative it is now.
Oh yeah, they're preloading the games and stuff, and I didn't want to do any of that stuff. I didn't want to offend anybody, you know. And not necessarily the old like retro game publishers, you know, like that wasn't the worry, but it was the community developers who made all that stuff, all their work. I wanted to make sure I honored that. And so I didn't want to profit off of open source stuff. And so that was another thing where I was just like,
that's the other thing.
Let me just teach people. So,
So you're wrong. I'm right. The Retro Pocket 4 is the way to go. And the OpenSUSE expense.
There's so many great handhelds out there. Anyway, we haven't even talked about the RGB30, which I love too, you know, in its own way.
Yeah, that's in my notes.
It's so flawed, but there's so many great things once you kind of get it going. I do love that, you know, but it is, it's very niche in that it's like, okay, you want to play Game Boy, you want to play Super Nintendo, you want to play Pico 8, that's the one. But again, like all the other ones can do that too. And so it's hard.
Yourself and Shem from Retro Breeze, you guys really got captivated. But I got it. I really liked it. I love the concept. I like the idea of the square screen. And then, so did I comment on your post on Twitter? But so they're making a vertical one now. And I saw it and I was like, that is the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life. Because I was like, be careful what you wish for. Because when I made my video, I was like, this could be a analog pocket killer, like a vertical version, beautiful screen, great controls. And all I wanted was for them to make this, but the same square concept, but this way. But then they went all weird. So
They did a very RGB20S kind of look to it. The thing is, what I loved about the RGB30 is that it is horizontal, right? Like that's the thing, is because that's so much more comfortable for me. And so
that is true.
I'm already pre-anticipating like that I am not going to love the vertical form factor of the other one. I never loved the RGB20S. And so why would I like it more now that it's taller? You know, it's still going to have all its same issues. So we'll see.
God, I hated that thing. I don't know if it came across in my video when I made a review, because in my mind, I just think I just said terrible things about it. But the further I get away from the review I made of that device, the more I hate it. I don't know why. Anyway, yeah. But yeah,
you know, you bring up a good point, though, about like whether or not we personally enjoy something and how to convey that in a video, especially if it's a review, you know. If you watch, you know, like say we're talking about like CNET or some other like big reviewing like company, right? That author has got personal feelings, right? But yes, they often will not convey those in a personal way because they yeah, understand that they're making a review for the viewer, for the consumer. And so the same thing with us. Like I will often hold back both praise and things I don't like about a device in the sense that I'm just trying to normalize it, make it to a point where I'm not just saying, because I don't like this thing, you shouldn't buy it. Like, that's not the thing. It's like, okay, is this a good fit? Like, for me, that's always like the thing I'm trying to push for. And so, I get that a lot. Like, oh man, this guy likes everything. I'm like, well, I'm just showing the positive and negative of everything, you know, and it's not that I like everything. It's just that, I'm showing you how you might like this thing.
It's like, if people just flipping pay attention, you know, the same with, talked about a similar thing with Tech Dweeb, and it's how, you know, because he also, people will say, oh, you just love everything. But if you listen to the video, that's not what the person is saying, you know, like the same with your videos, like, cause I've seen comments, then I go, but that's not the video I just watched. You're crazy. You know, you are positive. And especially in the early days, you were very positive, and obviously maybe it's also just very excited about the whole scene. But also this is a point that I've been wanting to make for a while, is we're in a different place than we were a year and a half ago, you know, like any of these devices that have come out now, we're in a totally different landscape, you know? So for me, the RG35XX was amazing when it came out. When it first came out, I was like, this is a brilliant device. Now the RG35XXH comes out, so I'm like, it's still, I love this device, but the software is not acceptable for 2024 when we've got all these other choices, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, it's exactly that. Like the landscape changes, you know. I made a video that was pretty popular back in the day. It was like, this is the handheld I play the most. And it was RG280V, right? Which is that little vertical Ambernic one, the kind of square looking one.
I loved it
and
too.
It was mostly because of the Atom software, you know, like, exactly. So you put that together, you put the Atom on it, and it really does become, at the time, for under $100, like the best kind of console little experience, pocketable and all that kind of stuff.
Still great.
And then the Miu Mini comes out, then the Miu Mini Plus, you know, and there's like, there's so many other great handhelds, and I haven't touched the 280V in months, if not years at this point, you know what I mean? And that's fine. Like that still was a great experience back then. But we got better ones now. And so, things change, you're right. And it's very hard to kind of be objective about that stuff. And, you know, people have got their opinions too. They're like, oh, well, because he got this device for free and he needs that free device gravy train, he'll never say a bad thing. It's like, dude, like if I'm going to compromise my integrity for a $60 handheld, then there's something totally wrong with my channel, you know?
That's true.
There's just crazy arguments out there. I get all that stuff. There's a benefit of being popular in that I'll get a device earlier, you know, and that does result in views. And, you know, I can't not disclose that stuff, you know. I think that's all, you know, important thing, but never is that once colored like how, what I'm going to say about a device, you know what I mean? Like that's the, most of the companies are not watching the videos we make. They maybe want to see if we're getting views and stuff, but they're not watching it. They don't really care what we have to say about it. They want to look at, you know, just whether or not you made the video in the first place.
Yeah.
You know,
is the link.
And so, I get all that stuff, and internet's got lots of opinions, and that's all good. So,
And it only gets worse the more your channel grows. So, got some fun to look forward to.
Definitely. I've always had kind of thick skin, you know. Obviously, in the military for a long time, you learn to live with every decision you make, you know. And so, the YouTube is giving me thicker skin, which is pretty funny. So,
it's hilarious.
I thought I was pretty thick skin in the military, you know. Nope, the YouTube requires more.
It's crazy. That is actually just madness. But that's, you know, the internet, social media, it is just a crazy place to live. Like, it's just insane. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been lovely to have you. I really appreciate you having you here again. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed listening to Russ. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, complaints, leave it in the comments and we'll see you in the next one.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah, this was great. Appreciate it.